When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Eyes on Isles podcast with Matt O'Leary and Mitch Anderson.
Welcome to Eyes on Isles podcast, everybody. I know I said it last week that hockey was back, but this week hockey truly feels like it's back. Matt, how are you feeling, buddy?
I am feeling fantastic. I am still riding high off my Nassau Coliseum visit. That's what I want to talk about most this week. But I'm sure we'll get to that eventually. But start with the pleasantries. How's your week going so far? Are you doing all right?
It's going all right. No sickness. The kids are good. So that's always a bonus.
Chalk that up as a win.
It's like 39 degrees Celsius here in Canada.
Can we get the Fahrenheit conversion for our American listeners?
A lot. Like 100, I think. I don't know. I'm gonna look it up.
That's like 64, I think.
It's shveti over here. It's very shveti. Which it usually isn't the case. Like, we're starting to usually bring out sweaters. It's starting to be like, well, winter is coming. We're all turning into Ned Stark. But not so much this time. I think it's just because we had such a terrible summer that it's kind of like school. If you miss a week at the beginning, you got to make it up at the end.
Okay. But so you'll take it is pretty much what I'm gathering from this.
Oh, yeah, hard. We'll take it hard. I'll sweat in September if that means the snow doesn't stay. Although, maybe it works the same way, and then we'll have snow in May. Oh, God.
I don't know. I'm not a meteorologist.
Oh, God. Anyways, yeah. Your week, good? Let's get to your week, and then we'll transition into Nassau, because that's the first thing we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, just, you know, usual busy self trying to work, and yeah. But mostly, I fall into this habit far too often at work. I check Twitter and look at what's happening in Islesland. And obviously, the biggest discussion this week was the return to Nassau Coliseum. And from my experience, Mitch, I foreshadowed this last week.
Yeah.
They roped me back in.
Oh, yeah. I saw the live tweets, and you were roped in hard, buddy. Before the puck even dropped, you were all in.
Okay. To be fair, all right, I know the tweet talking about. To be fair, John Ledecky was walking up, sitting in the section next to me, all right?
You don't have to tweet pro-club propaganda if he's behind you. You know that, right? He's not checking your Twitter feed.
No, but I just want to feed. No, but maybe other fans who are there are, and then be like, oh, you know, Matt's in section 203. And he's in section 204 or 205, whatever it was. Maybe we'll be extra loud and then make him feel bad and say, hey, let's bring the team back. I don't know, Mitch. They just put me in this mindset where I was back in my regular section. Usually I used to sit in 303, but now they're all the 200 section. So I was in the same section that I always sat in. I tailgated before the game. All seemed right in the world, and I wanted that back in my life some more. So don't give me any trouble for wanting this back on a regular basis. It was such a tease, but I bought in so hard. I think everybody did, as you saw on Twitter.
I couldn't imagine one person being salty about it, being there in the parking lot during the tailgating. This sucks because it's only temporary. That's the one person you kick out immediately. You get the H out of here. You're ruining the fun for everyone. We all get it. We know it's temporary, but like, take it for what it's worth. One last hurrah. You finally get, well, maybe not finally, but you get another goodbye. You don't usually get two goodbyes at something. You don't usually get the one.
Yeah.
So make it a good one or a gooder one.
Our writer, Kate, actually brought that up in one of her latest articles, saying that Sunday was actually like the perfect goodbye. Because, you know, like she mentioned, the last time she went to Nassau Coliseum, she didn't actually know it was going to be the last time she ever went. This time, for the most part, you're probably that is like looked at as the final goodbye Sunday. And
that's right.
I'm okay with it. I thought it went great. Obviously, Tavares scored in overtime, so like that's just like in typical Tavares fashion. He plays the hero. They win. You go crazy. You got the tailgate before. You did the Let's Go Islanders honks in the parking lot on the way home. It was a great time.
Yeah, I think that's just everything. Everything everyone wanted was just reliving that single narrative again and going back and tailgating. Going back and seeing the old barn, going back and living in the old barn, winning in the old barn, and then Tavares scoring the overtime winner. You know, it would have been great to not have to go to overtime. Although I guess it's preseason, so who cares? But the fact that he scored the winner is all that mattered. And then having that kind of, because it was an overtime, it had more weight to it. It wasn't like he scored at the beginning of the third period and you just had to ride it out for 20 minutes. You can leave the arena still feeling the high, and so those songs felt even more visceral than like the really loud honking from the guy behind you.
Right. And the funny thing was, I think I mentioned this in my wrap-up article on Sunday, the last time I was at Nassau Coliseum was game 3 of the Washington series. So Tavares scored an overtime winner in that game. And then on Sunday, he also scored an overtime winner. So in my mind, I was like, whoa, look at the connection. You know,
That's funny. Fantastic. So. That's a good connection. And that's, oh,
so
man,
I'm very happy with my last two times at the Coliseum. Like I could firmly say that I will never forget either one, and I'm okay if that's the goodbye.
So now you're well off the wagon. You're not let's go Nassau hungry all over again.
Oh no, I'm still hitched on this wagon. But I realize I don't know how to explain it. It's like a back and forth inner monologue that's going on in my head. Like, you know, those other cartoons where it's like the devil on the shoulder and then and the angel on the other shoulder. That's what's going on in my brain. And like the devil's like, Matt, they played a game. It could happen. They filled up the arena for a preseason game. And then the angel's like, no, you idiot. It's not going to happen. Belmont is the logical choice. And it's just very conflicting. I don't know how to explain it other than saying I feel conflicted. Maybe I don't think I'm the only one who feels that way, though. I think it's definitely related. I don't know how to explain it because I don't want to seem like rude or anything like that. But since you're not like from Long Island, so I don't think that you get the same vibe that the people who like drive 10 minutes to go to the Coliseum would get and hold that like emotional attachment to the Coliseum. You know what I mean?
I don't have the same attachment. I've never seen a game there. I just never had the opportunity to go. So I've only ever experienced a game at the Barclays. So already my experience is very diluted, but I get the emotional connection. I understand that it's there. I understand the importance of it. I understand why it means so much. So I don't think I want to downplay the idea of the preseason game. I like it. I to be honest, I think all it's worth is Yormark being able to show like we could do this sustainably going forward, and so I don't have to lose my $1 million.
Yeah,
I really think that's the best case scenario out of this for him, and maybe for Isles fans. It's that maybe there's more. Maybe they can go back again and play regular season games as per the deal he has with the county. That's it. I don't think there's any more into this, and we'll see. Like we'll see how long that even lasts, because who knows how long the Islanders are going to be at Barclays and thus under the auspice of Yormark's crew.
Right, that's the thing, because it all leads back to the Barclays Center deal and how much longer are they going to be in that? Then B, the RFP going on, and if they do get Belmont, I think we're just going to end up if we continue this podcast in the four coming years, it will still be talking about the Islanders arena situation.
I don't know. Well, I'm confident that they can get it done in time within like 3 years, I'm thinking, but that's hopeful, I guess. Like Barclays was constructed in 2 years, but it took, I think, 3 or 4 years to do all the legal paperwork, bureaucratic nonsense beforehand, before even a shovel went in the ground. So 5 years seems doable with a standard bureaucratic backlog. And that means that, you know, Tavares is still, assuming he signs a full 8-year deal, he's still got 3 years with the Islanders after that. So that's pretty good. I'd take it.
Yeah, I'd sign up for that in a heartbeat.
So we'll see. Again, like the whole Nassau thing is great. It plays back into the narrative. The fans clearly loved it because, again, it's sold out. Does that continue? I don't know. I doubt it. They couldn't do it before. Why would they be able to do it now? Because of nostalgia. At a certain point, nostalgia wears out.
I think it depends on how many times they did it. Like, if, let's say, what was the deal? It was like six games
four.
A year or something like that. Four?
Four regular season games.
If they did four regular season games, I'm pretty confident that all four of them would sell out every year.
That's fair. I feel like there'd be fatigue. And I think this is the perfect time because no one wants to go tailgating, you know, in the middle of January when it's minus really, really cold.
You do not know me
minus.
Very
you
well.
You don't have minus over there. So minus 20 is pretty good. So minus 40, I think, here is minus 40 over there. And it gets pretty cold. Like it hits minus 40 pretty regularly in January here. I couldn't imagine anyone being out there, even if you have the beers flowing. Being out there in minus 40 going like, this is amazing.
I've tailgated there in January and February, and I'll say just dress warm. And if you're of age, then maybe you could drink some other stuff to keep you warm. But
listen,
we don't promote underage
drinking.
I've been there
in January and February. It is not that cold, so you guys are lucky. God, you're so lucky. I'm going to have to move down to New York. It's done. I'm moving. But... I was all saying right. That loud so my wife could hear that, but I don't think she'll be too happy with it.
I paused because I was expecting a yell back, but we didn't get it.
No, you're not. Yeah. But so any other notes on the whole Nassau experience aside from it was good, you're still riding the high, and you still want to live it?
No. I think it was, like we said, I think it was an overall success.
Yeah, I think so as well. I don't think there's anything too negative to say about it. And I would like to find the one person who's salty about the Nassau game. And again, I think the best case scenario for the team is that, maybe not even for the team, but the best case scenario is that Yomar gets to play four games there, and that's not even great for the team.
Right.
So, yeah. Let's move on to other stuff. I think we gave that enough, you know, 12-minute love. That was all right. In a 45-minute show. Let's go to... One of our contributors, David, brought up an idea that we're going to keep doing going forward, and that's the debaters is what I've termed it. It's really original as far as a term is concerned, where two contributors from the site or one of us, one of the experts, will debate a specific side of a topic. And the first one that we did was, is Josh Bailey good or bad at hockey? Noted fanboy me... Noted Josh fanboy me took the not so good at hockey side. I just wanted to see what it was like from the other side of the fence. And then David took the pro side. And I was surprised with the results when we put out the poll on Twitter. I really was. So
yeah.
It was 71% agreed with David, the positive. What?
I am very disappointed in Isles Twitter right now because they do when they have because they don't stick to their word. See, when you have the
flip floppy John Kerry's
exactly when they have the ability to put in a vote where it doesn't show who you voted for, like I don't know, for all we know, George A. Pace voted for it was good, you know, he could have went completely off brand.
That's what happens when you block us. Right. Although I guess we can't see his answers to us.
No, but
I heard he's tweeting at us, but you don't understand how blocks work. We can't see it. So maybe unblock us and we can answer you.
Maybe poor choice, but that was just the first eye on the Josh Bailey hater that popped into my head. But the point is, everyone talks a big game on Twitter, but if you use your brain, which 71% of the population did, then things work out. It's going to be, you know what it is. It's the people with the agendas who are going to go out and say this. Although, I'd like to give my side because you had,
yeah.
We all know that you're pro Josh Bailey, although you wrote the negative side. I am a middleman in the situation.
Okay.
I guess I'm the independent party in this.
You're sitting on the fence.
Thing. Yeah. Because. I understand both sides of the argument, but I'm not very much on the pro side to where I'm going to say like, oh, he's fantastic. He's going to put up another 56 points this year. But I don't necessarily think that you can just say, oh, he's bad off of, you know, basing it off of last year's performance. So I'm in the wait and see category.
Right.
Because I just want to see what he does this year. If he drops back down to 30 points, then I'm probably leaning towards Fluke. I don't know if I would still say that he's bad, but average.
Yeah. I think bad is a strong term because let's be honest, they're all professionals. So none of these guys are bad at hockey. They're just not as good as maybe other players, right? Like John Scott was bad compared to John Tavares and a lot of players in the league. But you compare him to the general hockey playing public and this guy could probably outskate most of us. So he's not like Josh Bailey isn't bad. He's just not as good as we expect him to be. And I think that's the problem is that the word he is bad is just, it's just sensationalizing the side of the argument where he may not be as good as you expect him to be. And that's, to be fair?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's fair up until last year, right, where he wasn't living up to expectations. 41 points was his best season. That's not a great return for a ninth overall player. I understand that the way the draft essentially is supposed to work, really, is the first round, the first round is you get a guaranteed NHL player, essentially. And from there, it just dilutes from there where you have a bigger risk. The further you go, the riskier it is that he actually plays in the NHL. And Josh Bailey is that. He is an NHL caliber player. It just depends from there. You could have a first overall pick like Neil Yakupov, who barely makes it into the NHL or stays. Or he could still play NHL. He's an NHL level player. He's just not that great. So, yeah, Edmonton got an NHL-caliber player. He just wasn't a great one. So with Bailey, kind of the same scenario. We got a player who's an NHL-caliber player. He's just not that great of a one until last year.
Yeah, I definitely think that obviously last year. You know, I try to be as unbiased as possible looking at this. I can't sit here and say based off of last year that Josh Bailey is bad.
Right, absolutely. I think that's done and dusted.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anything, you could maybe make the argument that he's inconsistent, but I don't know if that you can necessarily then classify that as good or bad. It kind of falls right in the middle, which I think that's where I am.
And we'll see. I think this year it'll be kind of like the Ryan Strome of last year, where Ryan Strome had that really good season and a really bad season. So last year was, okay, well, which one are you? Are you the really bad player or the really good player? Turns out he was the bad player. So that's why they shipped him out and they got a great return for him. I still can't believe that return in Jordan Eberle. Like, my God. So the same thing goes for Bailey this year, and it happens to be a contract year. If come trade deadline, he's not doing that 56 and he's not even close to it, I would expect maybe a move depending on where they are in the standings. Because there's no way they're going to sign him for $5 million if he's not producing up to 40 points. If he's still in a 30-point pace, I don't expect them to pay out.
I have a scenario for you.
Yeah.
If he, and it's not necessarily with the Islanders, just in general here, keep that in mind. If he puts up, let's say, 40 on the nose, exactly 40 points this year, what do you think he gets in free agency?
He scores 40, so we'll just assume it's like split 20-20 kind of thing. Based off the market, he probably gets somewhere between 4 and 4.5. Okay. I would say that's my guess right now without having too much information in front of me, but something along those lines.
Yeah, isn't that
I haven't done it.
Isn't that similar to what Nick Bonino got? Didn't he get a 4x4, I want to say?
Bonino got something close to that. I think it's 4.1 AAV.
Yeah, but I could sit here. I could definitely say that Josh Bailey is a better player than Nick Bonino.
Yeah, well, Nick Bonino is also a center, so there's that to keep in mind.
True. That's kind of comparing apples and oranges a little bit, but
maybe not apples and oranges, but different, different
oranges and clementines.
Words. There you go. So comparables for Josh Bailey in terms of cap hit at time of ceiling. I'll take his cap hit off. I'll just go based off of. I'm using the Cap Friendly's comparable tool.
Okay,
and I'm saying games played similarity and points similarity both at 10. And his closest is Andrew Shaw in Montreal at 3.9. And then it drops to Yuri Tulusti at 2.95. Relatively same age. Signed within the last couple of years. So Andrew Shaw just signed last season. And he's 24. He signed a six-year, $3.9 million deal. I think Bailey could get maybe close to that, if not a little bit more. So assuming he does 40, I would say.
Okay. I was just curious what your thoughts were as the self-proclaimed Josh Bailey fanboy.
Yeah, my fanboyness is just that I like him as a player. I'm not saying that he's the greatest player of all time. I just like what he does. He's an okay player. He's a great second-line player. I don't think he's a first-line player. He was last year because we had nothing. I just like Bailey. I don't dislike him. I don't think he's a bad player. I just like him. And I also like taking a contrarian stance to what a lot of people do.
So, you're a rebel, Mitch.
I am a super rebel. That's why I have all these tattoos, rebelling against my parents, man. Good old suburban lifestyle. Okay, let's move on from Bailey, because I think we talked about him enough that people have, maybe they've tuned out at this point going, I'm done with Bailey. Let's talk about the preseason and how we're essentially four games into it now, because there's a split squad game going on at the moment. We're recording this September 20th, by the way. The Isles are up in Brooklyn, I believe, 2-1, and tied at 2 in Philly. So pretty good right now. They're also, is it 2-1 in their preseason game so far?
Yeah, so far, if we're not counting the ones going on as we're currently recording on Wednesday night.
Correct. Assuming they stay the way they do. Actually, we couldn't assume that. So anyways, and what's the score? Oh, I got money on the Devils, right? And it's a 3-3. It's a nail biter for me.
You're going to have to sweat that one out.
Oh, I'm going to sweat it out. Oh, God. Okay, so I wanted to ask you what your biggest takeaway is from the preseason.
The biggest takeaway from the preseason. That is a good question. I have two. I'll do positive first, then negative. Positive, Barzal can hang. He should absolutely have a roster spot this year. I thought like this offseason, there are some question marks of whether he'll make it or not, depending on, you know, because the forwards, there are pretty, there's a decent amount of them fighting for, you know, the 12 spots on a regular basis. But I definitely think that he should have a spot, and I think he's actually competing for the second-line center position because, as I now transition to the negative side, Brock Nelson is still proven to be Brock Nelson. And it's still very frustrating, and he's
very
kind of
much so.
He's playing his way out of the second-line center. He was basically handed that position on a silver platter because Gar Snow said, hey, I cannot find it in my being to trade for Matt Duchene because Joe Sakic's crazy, so... Brock, you seem like the best possible guy on our roster to fill that role. Position yours, and he's basically just went right down the tubes as per usual with him. I'm done. Yeah. Basically, as with the negative, I'm ready to shoot Brock Nelson to the moon. I can't deal with him anymore. I really can't. That whole series in overtime from not shooting to then following it up with getting absolutely... He looked like a traffic cone out there on the ice.
He was in orange. Oh, it did not look good for an NHL vet. P.S. Andrew Ladd just scored. Hopefully that's breaking the camel's back. Although, we'll see. Or not breaking the camel's back, but opening the floodgates on him scoring. And we don't have to worry about him not scoring for 3 months. on the Brock Nelson thing, you think he... He was weighed down by his disallowed goal at the beginning of the game, which doesn't add him any more, like doesn't give him any more, what's the word I want to use? Doesn't paint him in any more positive a light, if that's the case. But do you think that may have done something? The fact that he wasn't able to, he didn't get the goal that he wanted, and that just kind of brought him down the rest of the game?
I definitely think so. I definitely think that's a factor, and I think that's a terrible way to be. If that's not the right mental attitude to have if you're going to be a competitive athlete, you can't shut down like that. If that's the case, that's what makes him so frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of feel the same way. Like a lot of people brought up the fact, well, he did score a goal. You're going, well, he didn't, but you're right, he did get a shot off net and it did go in. It was only called back because Scott Mayfield cross-checked someone at the other end of the ice completely unattached to play. So good job refs on that one. But if that's the case, man, like you had it, you had the goal, you had the ability to get it in, keep doing that. Why would you stop doing that? And Like, he just did not look good afterwards. Like, it just kind of from there just shut down. And you're going, buddy, it's preseason. The games don't necessarily matter. I know that. But you can't get undressed by a rookie that way. You just can't. It just does not look good. I hope he's catching pelters from the rest of the team in the locker room for that one. That whenever, like, someone tries, you know, maybe they're both going towards the door and someone just kind of does a Denny Savard on him to get out of the way. I hope that happens all year long with Brock.
Yeah, cause that display was terrible. I have no other words for it. I knew, you know how I'm back. I was at my little computer station, gifting away as always, and then Brock Nelson was on my TV, and I was screaming at my TV. That's how you know I'm officially back.
I yelled "shoot" so loud. I think it woke up my wife. I couldn't believe it. He had a wide open look, and in overtime, just get it on net. And you're the last guy back. You got two guys ahead of you that can go and pick it up. Should you miss the net? Which you probably shouldn't from where he was. He's, you know, a little far out, just behind the face-off circles. But come on, buddy. Just do something. You had an open look, and then it goes the other way, and sure enough, he does something terrible and looks awful, and they score.
And it's not like he has a bad wrist shot either. Like, hey, that's your strength.
That's his thing. Come on, buddy.
That'd be like if Matt Martin was on the ice and had a completely open look at a hit to crush someone in the boards and is like, no, I'm going to actually play the puck for a change.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to try to deke around these guys. He tries to pull the spinorama.
Yeah. No sense. I don't get it.
No sense at all. My takeaways, I like the Barzal one. I'm still not sure. I haven't seen these two games that are playing right now, but he did look great in that one game he played. Mine is the penalties and how everyone. I'm going to have something go up on the site just after we're done this, hopefully. And I know that the refs are calling a lot, and we should have been ready for this because George Parros he literally came out and said they're going to be calling these penalties on stick infractions and face-off infractions. This is something we're going to do. And what better time than in the preseason to call these rather than the regular season?
Right.
Makes sense. Call them now, get us used to them now, get the players used to it, and get that stamped out before the regular season starts, before these penalties actually start meaning something. So I don't necessarily like the complaints that this is ruining the game. I really don't think it is. I think this is just a good thing. We saw it ourselves as Islanders fans at last year when Tavares got wax and wax and wax against the hand. I think it was against Anaheim where he caught a few at the beginning of the year. And it just seemed like he couldn't recover for at least a couple of weeks afterwards.
Yeah. So if Tavares is going to start getting calls, then I'm for this. Let me ask you this then. Do you think the players are now going to adjust, or do you think for the first couple of weeks of the season we're still going to see a million slashing calls?
No, I think players are going to adjust. We've seen it already just in that. So the game I'm referencing is the one against the Rangers where it was 18 penalties called between the two teams. In one game. It's absurd. I think there was 9 in the second period alone, and 6 of those were slashing penalties from both sides, but still. And we saw that stop in the third period where there was one slashing call. We've also seen, so Brad Marchand came out and said something about how the calls on the faceoffs are ridiculous and it's ruining the game. Well, you saw in that same article, I forget what Bruin it was. It was another Bruin who essentially said, well, I just stood there. I didn't want to do anything. I didn't want to get a penalty, so I just stood there like a statue. Well, you know what? Lesson learned. You guys figured it out that you shouldn't be doing this thing that you were doing beforehand, and you adapted. So the players are going to adapt. This is going to happen. It's September 20th. The season doesn't start till the beginning of October. There's still time for them to figure this out. They're professionals. They know what they're doing. They know what they were doing before was not according to the law of the game. They can change this, and they will change it.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I agree with you. I think that the players are going to have to adjust because if they don't, then the game is going to be rather boring with those so many penalties called.
Yeah, exactly. How did you feel about Tavares Eberle in that Coliseum game?
I liked what I saw. I think that there's potential there. I think that Eberle being the that he is the perfect fit to play on the Tavares wing. I like that, you know, because Tavares is a lefty, so he's probably going to feed the right wing a little bit more often. Mm-hmm. I think that they should put up big numbers, especially with Lee. I think on a previous episode you spoke about you were unsure about having both Lee and Eberle on the same line because you think that they play a similar role in sense of being down low.
It wasn't that I thought that they played that way. Is that there were comments from the team that I think it was even Tavares said that Eberle is a good net front presence guy.
Okay.
And I was going like, well, that's Lee's role. I don't want anyone else but Lee doing that role.
Right.
If Eberle's going to do anything, it's that winger that's creating space along the wing, just like Bailey was doing. And if you brought another guy like Lee to do what Lee did perfectly well last year, I think there's a problem.
Yeah, so that's fair. But overall, my thoughts here is that I don't expect the two to be separated. I don't think it's going to be like a revolving door. Like Cal Clutterbuck won't be spending any time on the top line.
That was great for my fantasy. I was able to draft him right away. It was fantastic. He put up some good points for me.
Yeah. But no, just to reiterate, pretty confident in the two as a pair.
Good.
Thoughts?
I feel the same way. There's that one play along the boards where Tavares just kind of played it between his legs, no look into the slot, and sure enough, tape to tape to Eberle, who was right there and got a good chance on net. He didn't score. It was a perfect play with two guys who understand exactly what game or what the other one is about to do. And it was game number one. It was just, oh, he missed, but still, maybe not miss, he didn't score. But the fact that he being Tavares, was able to get that shot, that chance off or chance to Eberle was just to me going, oh, this is perfect. This is the sign of things to come that they're already, let's say, speaking each other's language.
Right.
On the ice, and
I don't know if I necessarily want to throw the word chemistry out there yet because they haven't been together all that long. I know a lot of people like to reference that 2009 tournament, right? 2009, mm-hmm. I think I have the year correct.
That's right.
But there was something there. There was something there. I don't know if I'm going to necessarily say chemistry, but they're both smart hockey players. They have a high hockey IQ, so they know what they're doing, and they fed off each other.
Yeah, I'm just excited. I'm excited to see it actually happen in games that matter because it seems that there's something there. I'm just really excited. Do you have anything else you want to go over on the preseason? I think we kind of got all the big, like, hyped storylines out of the way, and we can get to our social segment.
Sure. We do have a few things to talk about in our social segment. First off, today, the 20th is our captain's birthday. It is John Tavares' birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yes. So I did have a question for you.
For me?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you knew John Tavares,
we know everyone here in Canada.
We're best friends with all the players. What would you get John Tavares for his birthday?
Oh, man. What do you get the guy who has everything except for a contract extension, I suppose? What would I get him for his birthday? Probably a social media person, because I think that's the one thing that it's lacking is just he's got no social media presence, and I don't want him out there ripping people like the Vegas Golden Knights Twitter, but I'd love to just have someone there using the John Tavares Twitter outside of just like advertisements for sunblock.
True.
That's my one thing.
Okay. I like that. I respect that. I saw the jokes on Twitter. I don't want to say a winger because that's overplayed, and hey, he has that already. Thank you, Garth.
He's got two.
Yeah.
Yeah, like come on, guys.
A pen to sign the contract. I'm sorry, that's just overused.
That's a good one. Yeah, I saw that one. I liked it.
I was thinking a personality, but that's a little too mean, I think.
No, that's fair. He like listen, he doesn't have one, and that's fine. Like I was listening to Secondary Assist. And he was saying that he, being Andy Graziano, says he doesn't even go to Tavares in the room first. He'll go to someone else, rather, because he knows what Tavares is going to say. We all know what he's going to say. We all know it's not going to be anything of interest. So why even go there? Maybe if he had a personality, it would be something of interest, and we have other sound bites out there. But
okay.
Alas, we do not.
In all seriousness, I would get him a sponsorship with Bauer so he stops breaking all those CCM sticks.
I know. What's the problem with this CC? Why doesn't he change? I don't understand. What does he just like the weight? The
I don't know.
Or the flex on
he,
it?
He must be it. Using like, I don't know, something like a 40 flex or something like that, because those things break like all the time. He's got to be using like a youth league stick. Cause
maybe.
I
well, you remember that one year that that Subban changed his stick and he just couldn't do anything? He broke them left, right, and center. Mm-hmm. It feels like Tavares needs to do the opposite, where he's already breaking them left, right, and center. Just switch them up, buddy. Switch them up.
Yeah, I don't know. So that would be my gift. I'm a Bauer guy, so I'll say a Bauer 87 flex.
Wow, 87 flex. That's pretty good. I'm just, whatever. I don't care. I just use whatever twig I get my hands on. The cheapest one at Canadian Tire is the one I buy.
Okay. You see, I know a few things or two about sticks because I used to work at a sporting goods store that sold hockey equipment.
Ah, there
so
we go.
A little peek behind the curtain there. So.
Okay, so what's the deal with an 87 flex? Is it just you love Sidney Crosby so much? Or?
No, that's just the numbers. It's like 100 is like barely, you can barely get any flex on it. That's like as high.
As then stiff
like 87,
as it gets.
Yeah, and then like 67, or and then like in the 70s is like intermediate, and then like 40 is like that's like a youth league stick, like a little guy would use that.
There, see, look, our tagline last week was "You learn something every time," and guess what? We learned something today. Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome. There you go. So, if John Tavares, we know you're listening, maybe boost up your flex
capacity,
please.
Okay, second thing that we had on, not we had, but that was going around on Isle social media today was Josh Ozhang, I guess, has his own alcoholic beverage somewhere?
At the Offside Tavern, yes. I could pull it up right now because they followed me after I said that I would take 27 of them.
Why 27 of them?
I don't know. That was this oddly specific number, but that's for sure.
It's very specific.
I don't think my body could take 27 of those anyway, but...
They didn't say what's in it, did they?
No. Their tweet says new cocktail, Josh Ho Tang. So it's not
It looks refreshing.
It does. It looks, there's a lemon. It looks like there's a lime in there, and the color of the drink is like a yellow with some sort of carbonation going on in there. It looks like
yeah. Right. I don't know. Probably like a fancier version of a lemonade. An adult lemonade with carbonation. Probably some club soda or something. It got me thinking, if you can make a cocktail for a player, what would it be? And what player and what would that cocktail be?
Okay.
I got one. I'll vamp on mine and you can think of one. So I have one for John Tavares. So we all know he's got a bland personality. He doesn't say much. When he does say something, it's of no interest whatsoever. But he's a top, top quality NHL player, right? One of the top 10s, I would say, maybe, depending on the person, top 15 at the very least. So my drink for him is just straight Grey Goose vodka. So top of the line vodka and just plain Jane, just straight vodka.
Okay, so just a vodka shot?
Just a vodka shot. I think that fits him perfectly. It's top quality, but just as plain as it can be. You know, the most basic thing possible. Just give me straight vodka, please. Oh, all right, thanks.
I have a couple, actually, okay. In mind.
Nice.
Jason Chimera.
Okay.
Old, grizzled vet. I see
Labatt
just like...
50.
I wasn't going to go there. I was going to go a shot of Jack Daniels. Just like rugged, yeah. Kind of, you know, a whiskey.
I like it. It's very American, and even though he's from Edmonton, but that's fine.
And then for this one might surprise you, but okay. I have to go into a little description and backstory of why.
Do it.
Cal Clutterbuck. You ever see him off the ice when he wears like the glasses?
Yeah.
Picture him as like a wine guy, like maybe a nice Merlot.
You think? Is that not hipster enough?
Oh, so you're thinking maybe like a... Some like
I don't know.
Some weird
like
brew.
Some German ice wine or something like that. Yeah, maybe a fancy brew. I had something different for Cal.
Okay,
that's why I kind of odd at the beginning. But I like it. I like that he's tasting his wine and sniffing the bouquet and finding the subtle hints of I don't know what. I'm not a wine guy.
Me neither.
I drink like the if I go to a place that serves just wine, I'll give me your house wine. red or white, I don't care. Whatever's closest, just give it to me. I don't. It doesn't matter to me. I'm a beer guy. But for Cal Clutterbuck, So what kind of player is Cal Clutterbuck? He's small, but he hits hard. So I thought just a 1 ounce shot of half Fireball and half Jägermeister.
Love it.
It's going to be disgusting, but it's going to hit the back of your throat like a ton of bricks.
That might be the best analogy of them all. I think I like that one for Cal better than mine.
I think it's a nice compromise. He's got this hard personality on the ice, but it's very soft off the ice.
Yeah, so maybe he could be both.
Yeah, exactly. The duality of Cal Clutterbuck. The duality of the double C.
I love it. Personally, yeah.
I don't have anyone else for the team. I was trying to think of something for Anthony Beauvillier, like just small and French, but I couldn't think of like a French alcohol outside of just like a French Canadian beer.
No, he's not even 21. So we got to get him like a virgin strawberry daiquiri or whatever.
In Quebec, drinking age is 18, my friend. He's been drinking for a little while now.
Okay, I'm bringing the state's perspective here to the podcast. So he's got to wait another 2 years as long as he's
driving up north so he can get his Labatt in or his Molson or whatever you guys think we drink up here.
I thought it was like only Labatt, if we're being honest.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff, but Labatt's the big one. Yeah, Labatt, Molson. It's the same. It's all owned by the same company, anyways. It's all one big thing, just like Anheuser-Busch. It's all one big thing over here, anyways.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else to go over? I think we've done everything we wanted to do this week on the episode. We did the return of Nassau, how fantastic that was. We did the Josh Bailey debate, and then we talked about the preseason, and then we went on a little social discussion.
Yeah, I thought it was good. It feels good to be actually talking about like some games now. So I'm very excited to continue that in the episodes to come. And yeah, another good show in the books.
Oh, good one. All right, buddy. Well, if there's nothing else, I've got nothing else. Make sure to go to the site to read all of your updated information on New York Islanders. So that's eyesonisles.com. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at eyesonislesfs. Go to Facebook, which is facebook.com/eyesonisles. And make sure to listen, rate, and review the show on iTunes.
And download our new app, the Eyes on Isles app.
Yes, we have an app. So it's available on both iTunes, or sorry, not iTunes. I always call it iTunes. On the App Store, because you used to get your apps on iTunes from the App Store, and you can get it on iOS or Android devices, whatever they use for Android
devices.
Google
Play, I want to say.
Is that it?
I think so.
I haven't had an Android device in so long.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But definitely download, read, react, interact. Mitch, that's it. I'll see you next week.
See you next week, buddy.
You can probably treat yourself to an ad-free upgrade, or at least grab an extra latte. After getting a Chime checking account with features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe, no minimum balance requirements, and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. That's chime.com/goals24. Chime. Feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.